I love how we started this, like, I don't know, months or weeks ago, however you want to count it, of just like, yeah, let's talk about some of the video game properties we like.
Uh-huh.
And now it's like, okay, well, the first thing you got to do is read these 30 Bionicle books.
Yes.
And then I'm chewing my way through a 180-page lore book on Thomas the Tank Engine right now. So this is going off the rails.
Hello, and welcome to Codex. It's a casual lore podcast. My name is Phil.
I'm Logan.
And today's episode is something that I forgot existed in my early 2000s childhood. I recently heard an episode, almost, close.
Damn.
I heard an episode of Remap Radio, I think 2 weeks ago they talked about it, and someone just brought it up. In combination with discussion of Animorphs. Do you remember Animorphs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that kid turned into a rhinoceros on the cover of that book. I think those might be horrific, actually.
I think
are they horrific?
I think so. I think there's like a
okay.
grim end and something about you staying the animal that you are if you stay that way too long. But we're not talking about Animorphs this week. I reserve the right to bring up Animorphs next week.
Okay.
But what we are talking about is, do you remember Bionicle?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
I did not have a Bionicle phase. I feel like I missed that by a bit, but I definitely remember the existence of Bionicle.
Awesome. I had several Bionicle sets, figures. I'm still not quite sure what to call them, but I never got into them. They were just another Lego toy that I played with. But then that episode of Remap Radio a couple weeks ago reminded me that, oh, right, there was like a bevy of lore about what is going on in the Bionicle universe. And I went deep on the Toamata, which is the original team of Bionicle. So that's what we're talking about today. But before we do that, it's Bright Spots time. Did you remember to bring a bright spot today?
I did. I brought something to show the class. The last time I was out looking at like old stuff in thrift stores or antique stores and whatnot, I found a stapler that I really like.
And I think it's a stapler.
Yeah, it's a Pilot Model 402. It has, I don't know, it's got some of the same vibes as that Dazor lamp. That I will have buried with me.
Just like over-engineered industrial stamped steel.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically. This is like before the swing line design that is like ubiquitous at this point. Let me see. Is there a... I might just have to send you a picture.
Yeah. I think I might need an image for this one.
There's got to be an eBay or something here. Here we go. Look at it. Look at this thing. So it uses a coiled spring mechanism to keep tension on these stack of staples.
Whoa. Oh, this.
And it pulls them
forward. Satisfying as hell.
And says, yeah. Yeah, it's heavy too. Like.
Ooh.
The plate. There's a little flip switch that allows you to change the spread of the staples, just like a modern one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that coiled spring pulls the staples to the front instead of pushing them to the front.
Interesting.
Which I think is an
yeah,
interesting
that's
change.
Cool.
It's got that nice knob on the top.
It's a big old button. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
That
yeah.
looks satisfying as hell to smash.
Yeah. Yeah. Something about this thing, I just like it. I like tools that very effectively do one thing well.
Yeah, this is a kick-ass looking stapler. Damn.
Mm-hmm.
All right. My bright spot is a little bit more digital. My partner and I finished playing through Lorelei and the Laser Eyes this week after, I think, like 20 plus hours of doing it, an hour and a half at night. Each night after our son went to sleep. And I think I think part of my enjoyment of that game is just like the good old the puzzles of it. It is a very good like logic puzzle game. But the second part of it that I love so much, and this has been like a topic that you and I have discussed a lot more recently, but it has a very, very good, like it tickles that part of my brain that gets really excited for sophomore and high school English lit, where there are themes and there are symbols and there are recurring motifs. And it finally feels like someone like did it on purpose, and you're not like deep reading something that maybe didn't need it. It's like, ah, yes, if you look at this long enough, you will see that there are themes going on here, and we did that intentionally, and it's supposed to make you feel good when you discover them. And I really appreciated that.
There's something about a well-crafted narrative that, especially one that makes you question if a human could keep that up for that long on purpose. That is kind of fun.
Yeah, and it's like they do a really good job of layering it into the puzzles too, which is the thing. It's not like there's a story happening and also you're doing puzzles. It's that many times the answer and the key to the puzzles is understanding the recurring themes of what is going on in the game. Like, if you can internalize the three dates that are important in that game and the idea of mazes and factors of 3 and 9, then like you're probably going to make it pretty far in there without having to like really unpack too much of it. It's a good game. Highly recommend.
Today's shared bright spot: intentional design.
You know what? Yeah, exactly. All right, let's get into Bionicle. But before we get into the timelines that I have, and before we get into the actual first story arc of Bionicle, I have kind of just like a fun brief overview of what Bionicle is as a toy in human meat space. And you said that you didn't have any, right? You kind of remember them, but
I don't think so. I feel like there was a pretty significant fast food tie-in at some point, so there's a chance I had something from that, but I think I missed the boat on like going to a store and buying a Bionicle.
Okay. Yes. So they came out in 2001. They did have an extensive McDonald's tie-in, so it is probably likely that you had one from that at some point. And they are Lego toys that are marketed for kids between 8 to 16 years old. They are part of the Technic series, which is the more kind of not brick based, but the like construction pieces, like I guess like Lego's version of an Erector set.
And those not have to follow the like standard brick rules? Is that why they're separate?
I think it's mostly yes, a little bit. The Technic sets are the ones that have the like cross. It's really hard to explain what they look like in audio. They have like cross members that are literally the shape of pluses that connect pieces together instead of general like the studs on the end of a Lego brick.
Okay.
And kind of the big thing going on with the Bionicle set is that they used ball joints. So the legs and arms were able to move on like internalized ball joints within the figures, which I don't know if that was brand new, but it was the first time it was used for like humanoid shapes. As you might have guessed, Bionicle is a portmanteau. It is a portmanteau of biological and chronicle. Why? I'm not quite sure.
It's a cool word.
Yeah, it's a good word. Also like Lego.
It's fun to say.
It is fun to say. Also like Lego, it is like its own plural form. It is not Bionicles. It is not Legos. It is they are Bionicle. Which
I feel like your father would disagree with both of us.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
It's Pokemons. It's Bionicles. It's,
yes.
All things need an S.
They all need S's. The thing about maybe the most important thing to the Lego Corporation about Bionicle, though, is that it was their first actual foray into like an internally owned property that was a combination of the actual kits that you would buy in stores and then much more in-depth storytelling. So, you know, most of the Lego kits before this were, you know, I remember some of them. I have to get my lineage right, but stuff like Rock Raiders and like the space sets and like all the Lego City stuff, they're mostly just construction kits that you played with, and then you could tell your own stories. And that was kind of the Lego angle, is that, you know, we give you toys to build and you take them apart, build them how you want, and then you can kind of tell your own stories. Bionicle is different. This is the first time that they're like, okay, these are characters, and these characters have a story, and that story is expansive and will continue to grow, and we will sell more kits based on these basically action figures that we're selling.
I do remember, okay, so I remember the Lego City stuff being big. Mm-hmm. I apologize if this takes us down a weird tangent. Did you play any of those like early Lego games?
Yes, I did.
Like your Lego Island and your, what was the other one? I feel like there were two.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Lego Island is a real punch in the memories, huh?
Uh-huh. There's recently one of the YouTube humans I follow did something with one of these. My brain is...
Oh, Lego Creator is the one that...
Lego... Yeah, okay. That's what I was trying to think of.
Yep. I remember Lego Island and Lego Creator. So Lego... Maybe I'm getting the timing of this wrong because childhood memories are weird, but I'm pretty sure Lego Creator was the first... like PC game I ever owned, because I got it, it must have been in 98 when it was released, with my first Acer computer.
Nice. Yeah, that all of that makes sense.
Yeah, wow, these screenshots are a blast from the past, huh? Yes.
I think I had it on disk. I feel like that was after floppy for me.
I'm pretty sure this was
maybe
disc.
Not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a Hot Wheels game on floppy. That was amazing.
Yeah, this is really startling, looking at this and remembering that this existed.
Oh, okay. So, Matt KC is the YouTube channel. But he like fully decompiled Lego Island to get it up and running on modern machines.
My God.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're into like weird old that era, like 95, Windows 95 era stuff, he's got a lot of weird work that I would recommend someone check out.
All right.
Anyway, yeah, that's funny. Bionicle.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess that's kind of like a perfect example, though, of like a lot of these games, they kind of have a story to them, but it is mostly like interacting with the Lego world of sets that they have. And Bionicle was like this big different thing where they, you know, they turned it into ultimately like a true transmedia property. Like there were construction kits, there were novels, there were comic books, there were movies, you know, it like they did everything. There were GBA games for Bionicle that you can play. And we'll talk about some of that stuff in a little bit, but it is this huge thing. And ultimately it's kind of like the Bionicle set is a little bit mostly responsible for possibly saving Lego during like the late 90s, early 2000s, like financial crisis they're going through. It was like this huge, huge thing. It ran for 10 years. So that it ran from 2001 to 2010 when all of this stuff was going on. And then it was later rebooted in 2015 with a simplified timeline of the original timeline. And then it was very quickly canceled in 2016.
I had no idea that existed.
Yeah, I didn't either. It was very surprising. They put out, perhaps most hilariously, last year they put out a like commemorative set, I guess, but it was of the original like one of the original sets, the Red Ranger, if you will. But it didn't use any Technic pieces. It was completely made out of bricks, which is just a weird swerve that they, like, the Technic line is still alive, but then they brought it back with a recreation of the original box and everything, but it's all bricked up, which is good.
Is it supposed to be a shelf piece, maybe?
Yeah.
Is it like those, like bonsai tree equivalents where...
Somewhat, yeah.
Do they want you to put this thing together because you have disposable income now and you're going to spend it on making little models of your childhood?
Yeah. It was like a $17 set, but yes.
Okay.
But yeah, so they rebooted it. It kind of flopped because it was kind of in the you have disposable income now phase of Lego in 2015, 2016. And most of the kids who had played with them 2001 to 2010 were now like, hey, I really liked all that weird lore you did. Why did you get rid of all of that and dumb it down? So then it just kind of didn't go anywhere in 2016. The fun statistic that I found is that as of 2009, so before the first run was even canceled, 85% of American boys between the age of 6 and 12 had heard of Bionicle, and 45% of them had owned at least one set, which just kind of like shows how huge this was.
Yeah, that's wild. I don't know how this missed me so hard. Did you say 2001?
Yeah, 2001 to 2010, yeah.
I might have just been like too deep into the prequel trilogies or something.
Phantom Menace stole everything.
Maybe. I don't remember. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, I remember these being everywhere. And I definitely remember the, like, mask-like faces.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, and they came in the little, like, plastic tubes. Like, they didn't come in boxes. They came in, like, canisters. This is also kind of the... Just to, like, further age us. But this is in the enhanced CD era. So they would actually come with, like... media discs and stuff that you could kind of put into a computer and experience the world of Bionicle. And it was like kind of packed in, I think.
Okay. That feels familiar. Huh. This is going to be a weird episode for me. I feel like slowly knocking the cobwebs away.
Yeah. So it's huge, and it was kind of very, like, quick glossing over all of the actual stuff. It was spawned out of two other sets that either came out for a year, called Slizers and Robo Riders, or two different Technic sets, and then they killed them. They were also originally called, I need to make sure that I get this right, the original name of Bionicle the original name of Bionicle before they changed the name to something a bit more sci-fi was the Boneheads of Voodoo Island, which is a significantly worse name.
Yeah,
for a multitude of reasons, but yes,
that sounds like one of the weird self-published novels I would buy at a book sale.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's bad. There was like a logo and everything. I'm glad that it was not that.
Huh. Yikes. I wonder how close to shipping that was. Or if that was just like a project name kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know that there was like discussion of it going out that way at some point, but how close it was to being the real name, I'm not sure. Like, looking at the sets as they are now, it's hard to imagine any of those being related to a name like that, but I mean, who knows? But speaking a bit of controversial names and everything, they did get in a little bit of hot water on account of...
This doesn't surprise me.
Cultural appropriation.
They have a vaguely like Pacific Island vibe that I assume was not done with a lot of tact.
Uh-huh. And it wasn't vague.
Okay. Okay.
So in 2002, after the sets, the first sets originally launched and like some of the multimedia stuff was going on, and I think around the first game either coming out or being close to release, there were multiple Maori tribes from New Zealand that sued the Lego company for basically wholesale lifting the entire vocabulary of the Bionicle names from their language. And then what's alleged in the letter is that the Lego company was seeking to trademark them, which is just like doubly bad, like let alone steal them, use them improperly, and then try to gain trademark over them. Whoopsies.
Just, yeah, we're going to take your words and send them to this British museum real quick.
Yeah. But good news, the law, it's a different time, 2002, the law provides and is on the side of good. The tribes ended up winning, and Lego changed some of the names in the Bionicle theme, in kind of like a, we're a corporation, so we can get away with what we want. The pronunciation of a lot of the names remain the same, but they added a couple extra letters here and there, and kind of, I guess, like removed the anglicized version of the original terms. But unfortunately, because the sets had already shipped, there are several words that are just fully pulled from specifically the Maori, but also just other Polynesian languages. There's some Fijian words and things like that in there. So we'll, the ones that will come up in our discussion today are words like Toa, Kanohi, and Tahu. Are just like actual words that they just never changed because they were already character names or important symbols in the set. But there was kind of a problem there, and some things changed, which I guess is nice that it was at least acknowledged. And that is also kind of a point to bring up, that I have done my best to pull the pronunciation keys on some of these, but it is difficult to find information on which way I'm supposed to be saying them. So if I change how I pronounce them or if I get them wrong, just know the Bionicle Wiki is not super well maintained, and understanding the difference between how they want things to be said and how the actual words are said may be different, and I will most certainly get them wrong.
I was about to say, I'm glad that you're the one who has to turn these letters into sounds and not me.
Yeah. Listen, we'll step on it as we go. So Bionicle Media, there's over 30 novels, 50 plus comic books and graphic novels. There are 4 feature films, a 2016 Netflix TV series, 5 video games on the GBA, the PS2, the Xbox, and the GameCube. There are online flash games and maybe the most important, there are 2 fan games currently in production: the Bionicle Quest for Mata Nui and Bionicle Masks of Power. I have seen trailers for both of these games, and they kick ass.
Yeah, that makes sense.
One of them
before they're shut down.
So far, they're going. They've been in production for several years at this point, I think. Many people, and maybe the weird part of this is that they haven't been shut down yet, but many people are saying that they sure would wish that Lego would just license them the IP to like let them do this in a very, very official capacity, because like Bionicle Masks of Power is just Devil May Cry, but with Bionicle sets, and it's sick.
That sounds pretty rad.
Yep. Highly recommend looking at those trailers. One of them is more of a RPG, and then the other is like a Devil May Cry stylish action doing cool shit with Lego sets, and it is fun.
I mean, they look like character action game designs, just
yes,
out of the box. So I'm not surprised that someone was able to adapt that into something neat.
Yeah, it's really surprising and startling how much you can just make a Lego set be an action figure. Like they really, like for the 2001 of it all, like they really, really did nail this is a set of Power Rangers and they just look like action figures, but also they're made out of Lego. Like, if you look at where the, like, all the Marvel sets are now, it is very much, like, that is what they have. Like, those are just Bionicle sets, but with Iron Man armor now instead.
Mm. So they're kind of, like, hijacking the undercarriage of these old figures and slapping a new coat of paint over the top, essentially.
Yeah, and kind of in the opposite way, as if you look at, I don't know how familiar you are with the Lego Brickheads, but those are just Lego Funko Pops in the opposite way.
Okay.
That
makes sense that they've done that.
That is Bionicle as a property as it exists today. There's always Lego Ideas sets that come up that are somewhat Bionicle flavored, and maybe someday we'll get another run at it, but so far it is dead and defunct except for a couple of fan games that are going on right now.
I assume they'll recycle the property at some point. If it was that big, it's still worth something.
Yeah. A couple of other just minor notes here, because if there are any Bionicle heads out there, this will be important. Most of that Bionicle, like all of those properties and everything that I'm talking about, like the TV shows and the comic books, the novels, all of that, is primarily written by one person whose name is Greg Farshtey. He is like, basically they created the kit early on, and then from there it expanded out into all of these novels and everything, and he is the primary author on almost everything. Like, basically all of the novels and all of the comic books were written by this guy. And there is just some fun stuff about a guy who worked at Lego as a copywriter and then turned into someone who wrote the entire Bionicle mythos, because in his spare time he used to work in like making D&D manuals. So he was like an RPG writer, and then just got to work at Lego and turned it into his own ever convoluted mythos that also has kits, which is just fun.
I could have guessed the like D&D origins just from this man's picture.
Yeah. Yep.
He's got that D&D module writer beard and glasses combo.
Yeah. You've seen this guy at Gary Con. At least seven of them.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's there's like some stories about like clashes with fandom in the early 2000s that definitely don't go his way, specifically around like, are Bionicles, like, are they gendered? Because in their writing they are gendered, but actually they're not, except when they're in love, but they can't be in love, specifically because the author is maybe going through a pretty rough divorce, so love sucks and everything's bad. But we're going to gloss over all of that stuff, because ultimately none of the stuff we're talking about today involves any of that. It is the most origin story of these little funny sets as can be.
So pin in that one for a part two.
Oh, we will revisit Bionicle. I'm going to gloss over 100,000 years of history to our actual topic. So don't you worry, we will return to the Bionicle mines.
Is this our longest spanning property so far?
It might be. It is probably pretty close.
All right, lay it on me.
All right. So
what is the Bionicle?
So a Bionicle is a biomechanical being. Some of them are sapient, some of them are not. Maybe the best analog for this these days is if you look at the animals and creature designs in something like Horizon Zero Dawn, that's kind of what the Bionicle world looks like. It is a lush jungle planet. It has, you know, it's got your biomes, it's got a desert, it's got a tundra. It has all of that stuff, and it just so happens that there are these biomechanical and somewhat like designed creatures that live there, and some of them are animals, and then some of them are heroes. So the world itself is populated, and we'll get into what all of that looks like. The people we're talking about today are the Toamata, which are the those are the main sets that you're able to buy right at the beginning, and they're your Power Rangers. They're, you know, you literally have the red, green, I don't think there's a yellow or a pink, but red, green, white, blue, black, and brown, I think, are the, there's six of them, and they are all elemental, and they're kind of like the heroes of the world. And something to think about as we go through all of this is that there are kind of important things that are built into the programming of the world, and programming is a word I use literally. They are that all of the creatures of Mata Nui, and kind of the Matorans specifically, but just most of the creatures, believe in the three virtues, capital T, capital V, which are unity, duty, and destiny. So unity is pretty obvious. It's kind of like the notion that it's easier to succeed together, which is mostly focused around like small teams of the Toa, which are your Power Rangers, or also just kind of your tight-knit villages. You know, everyone chips in, everything gets done. Duty is the other kind of pretty obvious one, but it's, you know, everyone has a duty to fulfill their everyday tasks and to do it diligently and responsibly so that the, you know, the village can remain united and therefore succeed. And then kind of the third one here, destiny, is very complicated. And I mostly just throw these three virtues in here because I know that you would like to hear this. It is believed and sometimes literalized in the Bionicle universe that each being, you know, asterisk sapient being, has a particular destiny. So today we're talking about the Toamata, and their destiny is very explicit. Their destiny as a team is to awaken Mata Nui, which is the name of the landmass. Once they achieve their destiny, they can relinquish their powers as Power Rangers and then kind of either fade into the background as, you know, just protectors of villages or like wise old sages, or they can maintain them for some reason and then kind of train the next generation. The destiny of all creatures for what we're talking about is set by Mata Nui, the landmass. But Mata Nui's destiny was set by the Great Beings, capital G, capital B. Any questions about destiny and how it relates to the Bionicle fiction?
Okay, so where do these three come from, I guess?
The virtues?
How do we know, yeah, how do we know those are, in fact, virtues?
So they are actually within the programming of Mata Nui. So they are programmed virtues in Mata Nui, and Mata Nui will generate the, I guess, the animals, the beings that will, for this conversation, we will refer to them as Matorans, which is the people of Mata Nui. So they are generated. We're not talking about how they come to be. I don't actually know, but they become, and they are instilled with the virtues from moment of inception.
That is a different definition of virtue than I think I would maybe use then. Interesting.
Okay. Yeah.
So are we doing hard determinism then? Is destiny predetermined in the way that maybe colloquially we would understand it?
I think so. So some of them, like I said, some of them are very explicit. Like the original Toa team, like they have an explicit destiny. Like their destiny is to awaken Mata Nui. I think maybe the difference here is that I don't know how much the like plot of Bionicle goes into whether that is a goal or that is like predestined. Like if that will occur, it does occur. Like that thing does happen. They are heroes. It happens at the end, but whether that is like predestined in a way that there is no path away from it, I'm not quite sure.
Because I think that's like narratively a pretty huge distinction.
So
if destiny means goal or if destiny means inevitability.
So I will say this, when we get into the timeline here in a second, there is something like there is a, oh shit, we'll just jump into it right now. There is a thing that happens on this planet. So the planet they're on is called Spherus Magna, which is a
good
name for a planet.
Yep. I'm going to steal that for something later.
So Spherus Magna is a planet. It exists. There are beings and species that are on there. There are already some of the biomechanical beings, but they are not the Matorans. We're going to set those aside for now. They are the ones with destiny. We'll set them aside and come back to them. So a very long time ago, the great beings, capital G, capital B, they rise to prominence on Spherus Magna because they're scientists and they like to discover things and they like to invent things. It is kind of assumed that they are inventing some of the life forms that are coming to rise up on Spherus Magna, but it's not super explicit in the stuff that I've read. But they are much more interested in building things and discovering things and learning things. They're not so interested in perhaps dealing with the large population of people who would prefer that they had peace and order in their life. So what they do is they create the seven elemental lords. And the elemental lords run each of the villages, like each of these nations. And they say, hey, you guys keep the peace, make sure that all this stuff is running fine. I'm just going to go over here and I'm going to think for a really long time about some cool stuff that I can make. The elemental lords are the elements of fire, water, jungle, sand, rock, ice, and earth. Those are similar, but not the exact same as the Toa Power Rangers we will meet in a little bit. So for thousands of years, all of that stuff works out fine. Everything's great. Everyone's living peacefully. The villages are thriving. There's trade. It's all of this fun stuff. However, there's this thing called energized protodermis that is a dangerous substance that is bubbling up from Spherus Magna's core. And this is kind of the back to the destiny thing. Energized protodermis has the power to create stuff. It has the ability to transform things. It can fuse stuff together or it can destroy it. And any object or creature that it can come in contact with, it will shift phases or do those different things, but it is dependent upon the destiny of the one who came into contact with it. So the thing here is that, like, if it is your destiny to simply just, you know, go on and live a healthy life and then die eventually, it'll just skip to the dying part and you will die. Like, that is the description of why, what is causing you to die. But there's part of the reason that this kicks off, obviously, a bad war is that it will also turn tools into weapons, kind of getting into the, you know, we're breaking out of the natural state now and we are introducing conflict to the world. And it is because those things are destined to occur. Like these tools will, you know, turn your plowshares into swords, I guess. Like we are getting to that level. And that is within the core of the planet. So there is like some part of destiny is real and also destiny is interacted with in a way that is very interesting to me, especially when some of the things have explicit destinies, but most things do not.
Oh boy. Okay. Uh-huh. So protodermis as in skin dermis?
Yeah.
Okay. Does it seem like they know what those words mean? Because
I think it's just a cool sci-fi word.
Okay. Didn't know if that was the direction we were going or if we were intended to know that. Okay. That's fine. So does that come... Is that coming from the same source as the virtues?
No.
Is that makes this no.
No. So protodermis is just a thing that is in the planet, and it is like coming out. Actually, let me take that back. It works the other way around. So protodermis is coming from the planet. And then at some point, the great beings are like, oh, dang, this is causing some conflict with our people, and that's really bad. What if we can take this substance, make it slightly more inert, and use it to power something else? So
it's oil. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's destiny oil. It's 2001. You know, we're talking about...
Just call that oil.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking about Final Fantasy VII over here. Like, it's just oil. It's all oil. So
okay.
they use the oil to make a giant robot to send off into space. That giant robot is referred to as the Great Spirit Robot or Mata Nui. So the giant robot also goes off into space. It's powered by energized protodermis and then, you know, moves on, things happen. And then they ultimately make a more inert version of that. So, you know, a biofuel. And that is what they power the giant robot with in like its second generation. And the giant robot, Mata Nui, is also the home of all of the people we will talk about later in this episode. And they are the people who are primarily destined, like their programming is set, their destiny programming is set by Mata Nui. So they are, I guess in a way, they are creatures of energized protodermis or protodermis, and therefore perhaps have destiny imbued in them in some way. But that doesn't explain how it has destiny effects on creatures that run into it before that happens.
Do we know the inciting incident to build a mech colony ship and launch it into space? That seems like another jump we've made.
You do
enough science, eventually you get to colony robots.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately this energized protodermis stuff was let's take it back to oil. It was a runaway train that was destroying the planet, right? So like ultimately we have introduced this substance and it's going to make things really bad. So now we need to make a colony ship to start all over somewhere else.
So they did a global warming
because
they did an oil. Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
So yeah, they do that. The energized protodermis can create life as well. So this is kind of the other weird thing. It creates life. It destroys things on contact. It can transform an object if that said object is destined to transform into something else. And this ultimately creates this global spanning conflict called the Core War, which is a good rhyme, but kind of difficult to say.
Yeah, that one works on the page,
yeah.
not on record.
Yeah.
I want to fight this property about their definition of destiny so hard.
Uh-huh.
I'm just going to be vibrating at the other side of this microphone, letting it go.
No, that's fine. You should do that.
Because we'll never get anywhere.
No, we will not. It is a interesting thing as this goes, how much of it is, like Is it a philosophical question? I don't know. The difference between destiny and programming. Because ultimately, these are all biomechanical beings that are spawned from a giant mechanical apparatus that is built to colonize worlds. So how much of what they refer to as destiny is simply a like way for them to satisfy like the theological sense of what their programming is?
We're just going to have to do a separate episode of something where I just make you believe in hard determinism.
Interesting. That is not the way that I thought this was going, and I'm very excited for that okay. episode.
Cool.
All right, so the Core War. The Core War is happening, continues to go ongoing. The Great Beings, they create a synthetic version of energized protodermis. Like I said, they just chop off the energized bit. It's just called protodermis. As creative as they are, they couldn't come up with a good name. They build the robot, Mata Nui. The robot, and we really need to underscore this point, we're not talking about like a Megazord robot. We're talking about literally a robot that is 12,000 kilometers tall, which is roughly the circumference of the Earth. So just take.
I was gonna say,
it's a big old robot.
Where? Okay. So where does that material come from, and how is there still a planet left when they're done making it?
Who knows? It's a giant metal robot.
That's fine. I had to do that. Yeah. Okay.
So the robot is called the Great Spirit Being. It is also called Mata Nui, and it is also referred to as the Matoran universe. Part of this is just because they had to go back and retcon stuff and like fill in some gaps after the first sets came out. You know, going back to this guy just made a very convoluted history as he had 10 years to do it. So we're filling in some gaps as we go. But it is called the Matoran universe, Mata Nui, or the Great Spirit Being. What happens, and this is kind of difficult to piece together because the timeline is weird and, like I said, covers 100,000 years. Mata Nui was created by the Great Beings as a living generation ship to explore the universe. Probably to get away from a planet that was imploding, but kind of unclear. So that just exists. Like, they made that thing, they shot it off into space and said, here you go, Matorans, live within all of the domes within the exoskeleton of this giant robot and kind of go out and colonize the universe. Unfortunately,
I love properties where the solution to like some existential threat is, what if we built a giant robot?
What if we went somewhere else?
I just love the impulse, like the Pacific Rim of it. Just like, yeah. Well, what if we made a robot to fist fight the monsters? That's probably the most efficient way to utilize these resources.
It's basically every late 70s, early 80s anime. Like, yeah, at least 50% of them are, what if we made the biggest robot you ever heard, and we just go out into space and see what happens?
Yeah, yeah.
So, meanwhile, the discovery of energized protodermis and its exceptional power caused war between all of the tribes. That's the core war. A lot happens, but ultimately, the energized protodermis, along with all of the tribes fighting, they weakened the planet so much that it shattered into three pieces. Bara Magna, Bota Magna, and Aqua Magna. They are, as you can imagine, probably related to very specific biomes. You know, Bota being jungle.
This,
Aqua.
This time's the words matter.
Yep. Aqua is the ocean one. Surprise.
Mm-hmm.
So the war mostly ends then. You can't really fight too much when your planet explodes. And it is thrown into several tens of thousands of years of dark times. And then the Brotherhood of Makuta is founded in the Matoran universe, which again is the giant space robot.
Mm-hmm.
We're now at the point where all of the peoples with living within the giant space robot maybe don't all know that it's a giant space robot anymore. So we're kind of jumping forward a lot here. But the Brotherhood of Makuta did know, because it was in their programming to create and alter the biomechanical life there in order to populate the Matoran universe. Basically, they created machines, like biomechanical machines and all the different animals, not the sapient creatures, in order to keep the ecosystems alive and thriving. Unfortunately, as is the case with most of these stories, a member of the Brotherhood of Makuta, referred to as Makuta in the beginning, and his name changes to Pterodax in later media as we get more convoluted.
That's probably not a bad guy name.
No, definitely not. He leads a coup, usurps some power, uploads a virus to Mata Nui, and then after 300 years, Mata Nui goes into a coma, crashes into the surface of Aqua Magna, and now we can flash forward 100,000 years and talk about the original Bionicle set that you bought in the store.
An hour later,
we're there.
We're ready to start this episode.
We did it. This is the, hey, if we're going to do a Bionicle episode, this is it. And honestly, we could end right here, but the next bits are kind of pretty light compared to what we just went through. So I'll just speed through it. But
that was some Silmarillion density. I like that they let someone just swing for the fences with nonsense on this property.
They just let him cook. And I promise you, I like it, it's not that, like, all of that stuff about like Makuta leading a coup and everything, that is seven novels.
Heresy.
Like, that is like huge. And then that, like, 100,000 years, like, we're going to talk about the first, you know, quote unquote, the first Toa team that you run into when the set launches. But there's another one before then that has their own series of mysteries and their own series of adventures that sets up, like, they are the prequel to having this happen. And that's just, they just did that later. Like, that's like a weird 2003, 2004 set that they put out that just like, okay, well, you like those first heroes. Let's talk about the other ones though. And the dude just, he just went for it. Like, they just kept going and there's like, all right, go ahead, Greg, like, go off, I guess.
There's a lot of, I think this was a Netflix thing, maybe The Toys That Made Us.
I have not seen it, but I have heard it. Yes.
There's definitely some, I would recommend it. They're a lot of fun, especially the He-Man one. But there's a lot of parallels to those old, like, TV tie-in lines. Your He-Mans, your G.I. Joes, and whatnot. I'm guessing LEGO did not think this was going to be anything at all. So they just sort of let this guy go, and then it blew up, and they're like, well, all right. I guess we'll just keep riding this train until it crashes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because none of this reeks of the corporate planning that I would expect for a property like that they anticipated to be this large.
Yeah. And like I said, a lot of this stuff that we're talking about in the preamble here is definitely stuff that was added later, but it's still, to your point, like, even if you're 5 years into this, like, are you really going to have someone create an entire set based around, like, dark coups and usurping power and, like, putting a giant robot into a coma? Like, there's a lot going on in here that is not for that 8 to 16 year old kid, you know? Like, there's a lot of Machiavellian bullshit going on this giant space robot.
You know, it's a kid show.
Yeah.
Just like
kid show. Yeah. Just like Gundam.
It's a kid show. Just like Gundam, just like your Clone Wars. You know. Yeah.
Just for kids. Yeah. So that is like the very primer beginning of Bionicle. And it kinda goes from there, but that is the incredibly light touch up to where we're going to go. And then you worry, after the Toa Mata segment that we're going to talk about next, there is more. Like, there are several more iterations of what is going on here. The giant robot wakes up, and that's like a whole arc. There are alternate realities. There's giant space stations. It just, like, it goes full anime at one point, and it just doesn't stop. Like, this dude just continues going and going and going, and I love it. I have found this is my RuneScape for the next several episodes, probably, that I'm going to work on. That's just like
your brand of weird.
Yep. This thing just keeps going. Like, how did this kid's toy get here? Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's take a quick break here, and then we will come back and I will talk to you about the Toa Mata, and hopefully it is a little bit simpler as a straightforward story than the entire mythos of the Bionicle universe. All right, so we are talking about the Toa Mata. So the Toa Mata are the original Bionicle sets that you could buy. If you conjure up an image of a Bionicle set in your brain, you're probably, if I were to send you the image of the red one riding a skateboard over some lava with a flame sword, I'm pretty sure you would recognize that, probably.
So this is your Gen 1 Bionicle. Yeah. Okay.
I'll just send it to you because these are absolutely beautiful sets and I love them so much. This is I'll just send you the weird. Here's the instruction booklet. This is how you can make one. Man, the JPEGs on this, huh?
Wow. That is probably meant for a 480 monitor, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, but look at the logos. Those are like 300 DPI right there. The rest of it, garbage. So yeah, this is Tahu, the fire.
Oh yeah. Okay.
The fire one.
The verbal description did not get me to this image, but you are correct. This is definitely seared in to some degree.
Yeah, and then the next page in the booklet is the Toa canister.
Oh, these are connects. That's what this is.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah.
In like, yeah.
Man, I haven't thought about connects in a long time.
I loved connects. Can you just buy connects still?
I wonder if that's why Bionicle passed you by. You were a connects kid.
I was a connects kid. Yeah, that is true. That could be. This was just like a more limited connects. And I didn't catch any of the lore at the time to get that kind of tie-in. Oh, this one gets Megazord-like. Look at that.
Yeah, you quit scrolling. Spoilers.
All right.
So that is Tahu, the original Bionicle. There are five other friends. But yes, those are the original ones we're talking about. Okay. So we're going to do we're going to talk about 100,000 years in the past because it's impossible not to anymore. But so the Toamata, these original six warriors, they were created by Artaka, who is one of the original two Toa that were created by the great beings 100,000 years ago. So there is Artaka, and then there is his brother of sorts, who we're not going to talk about, but let's just say his brother runs the place that is supposed to be the repair shop for everyone, but also it's maybe hell. We will talk about that in a separate episode because it is fascinating. Oh,
yes. A repair shop, a hospital, if you're a biomechanical being?
I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's a hospital that maybe has a little bit more Five Nights at Freddy's in it than maybe was originally intended.
Than most hospitals.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. The Toamata, the ones we're talking about, were created by Artaka, and they were members of the Order of Mata Nui. They were descendants of the elemental lords, and they were protectors of Mata Nui. So the way that I was trying to conceptualize this in my brain is that 100,000 years ago, they were the original Thunderbirds for the giant space robot. And they have adventures, and they do stuff, and they're protectors, and all of that great stuff. And then at some point, they were put into those Toa canisters, which are on the second page of the instruction booklet, put into a deep sleep. And this is where the destiny comes back in. They were put into hibernation just in case, for some reason, something were to happen in the intervening 100,000 years that Mata Nui would need to be awoken. A very specific destiny. It turns out that maybe 100,000 years in the future, Mata Nui did need to be reawoken.
Okay, so this is your putting Sylvester Stallone into cryo sleep just in case Wesley Snipes gets out eventually.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yep. Yeah, it's basically Demolition Man if you think about it.
I like to believe most things are basically Demolition Man if you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So generally, pretty soon after they were put into their Toa canisters, the shenanigans with the virus and then the coma from Mata Nui happened. The Toa canisters were dispatched as was expected, and they crashed into the oceans of Aqua Magna, which is the ocean planet.
Starting on the water level. That is a rough intro. All right.
Yes. So Mata Nui crashes into the surface of Aqua Magna. And then it's kind of unclear. I think basically what happens is that it crashes into Aquamagna, and then the map of Aquamagna and like the original, like first run of Bionicle is just, it's vaguely humanoid shaped. Like there's just like a giant center island and like a head island and everything. And that's, it's just, I guess the population left the internals of the giant robot and moved onto the surface. So it's all very archipelago. And now we're kind of getting back to the Maori, you know, look, it's a Polynesian island. You know,
okay,
yeah.
So the 14 kilometer mech crashes into a fragment of a planet, and
turn 12,000 kilometers tall crashes into a planet.
12,000. Okay, so it, at this point, it's got to be bigger than the planet fragment, right?
I suppose the
right. So like
the planet, the image of the planet is very hilarious because it is a sphere. And then coming out of the, I don't think it's the poles, but it is basically whatever the poles on the equator would be. It is two smaller spheres. One of them is white, or one of them is blue, and one of them is greenish, are coming out of the side of a desert planet. So, like, they're moons of themselves, but, you know.
Okay.
Somehow. So
they got their own physics here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is what we're doing. That's fine. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So yes, the Mauna Nui crashes, becomes the entire landmass, 100,000 years passes. And unfortunately the canisters that the six Toa were put in, something went wrong and they basically just floated in the ocean for 100,000 years waiting for something to happen.
If there's one thing we've learned in the last few weeks, it's that the hell pods are not always properly packed.
Correct. Yes. And sometimes the best way to fix that is you steal a little bit from Dragon Ball.
Okay.
So Takawa, which is a Matoran, and the image of Tahu that I sent you is like it's a tall action figured proportioned Bionicle. The Matorans for most of their depictions are the Happy Meal toys that you would get from McDonald's, where they are basically a truncated chest segment and then the feet attached directly to the chest, and they have like little arms and a little mascot on top. So they're like maybe as high as Tahu's leg. They're like cute little guys that kind of go around, and they're adorable. So Takawa is one of those. And we're going to talk about him in another episode because, spoiler alert, he will turn into the White Ranger.
Rad.
With all that means. He goes on an adventure, and he gathers the six Toa stones. And then he places them into the respective suvas, which are just kind of like, I guess, like gravestones, but also kind of like cool Power Ranger consoles. And then he, by doing so, he activates the Toa canisters, finally getting them out of their listless state. And then they bring the Toa Mata out of their hibernation, and they land on the shores of the island that they're on. So he calls in the Dragon Balls, and then they show up.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
They land, and this is maybe the grossest part of it is, when I say that they are biomechanical beings, something that doesn't really come up a lot is that they have, like, they're little Lego guys that seem like they're just made out of bricks and stuff, but there is organic tissue in there somewhere. And I haven't seen, like, a biblically accurate Bionicle illustration yet, but somehow there's flesh and actual dermis in there, I guess.
You're not going to get this, but are they the Borg? So they're the Borg?
Maybe.
We're gonna have to do next-gen stuff.
Yeah, I don't think they've been assimilated, but I guess maybe they have been.
Can they survive without the bio piece?
Yes.
Okay, so they are not the Borg, then.
So they arrive on the shore, and their canisters open up. And actually, if you look at the instruction manual, I didn't realize this when I sent it to you.
Seems like he's not having the best of time.
Yeah, so the second page there is the canister being wide open and just a bunch of grayed pieces sitting on the beach.
Just a puddle of Bionicle.
Yep, yep. So that puddle of Bionicle pretty quickly is able to recombine and assemble itself, and then the organic tissue grows back pretty quickly. But unfortunately, and I guess we're going to have to continue running the ticker of things that it steals from anime, they have lost their memories because they've been in storage for so long.
Mm.
So there are six friends. There is Tapu, the one we've been talking about. He's the Toa of Fire. Toa is the Maori word for warrior.
Okay.
There is Kopaka.
Pretty clearly.
Yep. Yeah. So there is Kopaka, who is the Toa of Ice. They are white. There is Gali, who is Toa of Water, the blue one. Pohatu is the Toa of Stone, which is brown. Liwa is the Toa of Air, which this is a bit of a out of the blue one, but they are green for air, which feels odd to me.
Quest 64 did that. Yeah, Quest 64 did green for air, so that's kind of baked into my brain.
All right, and then there's like a light Anua. Green. Liwa is very, very green, like green.
Okay.
And then there is Anua, who is the Toa of Earth. They are black. So your real actual Power Ranger vibes here. And we'll gloss over a bunch of their small adventures that are kind of cataloged throughout the myriad comic books. But basically, they all split up and go to their respective villages on Aquamagna. So each of the islands, or some of the islands, are like, this is the Fire Island, you know, very Avatar. This is the Stone Island. This is the Earth Island. This is the Air Island. And all of the different warriors go to their respective villages. And within the villages are the Turaga, who are the former Toa that had achieved their destiny, gave up their elemental powers, and now they are village elders of some variety.
Okay, so there's like this like cyclical Cincinnatus thing going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Where
yeah.
someone gets called up and then completes the task and then returns to Yeoman Farmer.
Yeah, yeah. And those Turaga are the ones that in future, I think like a couple sets later, they are the Toa of Metra Nui, which are the original ones that basically got the Toa stones, hid them, like hid the Dragon Balls so that someone could find them and summon the guys who need to actually solve the problem. Because it was not their destiny to reawaken Mata Nui. It was their destiny to awaken the Awakeners, I guess.
Who awakens the Awakeners?
Yeah. Yep, who awakens them? So they go to their villages, and the danger in this world now is that the Rahi, which I don't know if I mentioned yet, but that those are the non-sapient biomechanical beings. So they have the protodermis in them. They're made by the Brotherhood of Makuta, and they've been zombified and they've been weaponized. And in the intervening 100,000 years, they've become more violent, and they've been used by Makuta Teradox for his own personal canes. So they punch him up, do some fighting, and then they save their respective villages, and then they are given their big quest. They have to go defeat Makuta and save the world from this great terror.
Do we know if there are like elemental type damages? Do we get like the Pokemon elemental system with our various warriors here?
That is a fantastic question, and it leads me to my next thing.
Perfect.
So it's not necessarily Pokemon elemental damages stuff, but the kind of like an important part of this, and again, like I will just continue to pay lip service of this just to remind people, but we're stealing from more Polynesian cultures here. In Bionicle, every creature, every sapient creature, and some of the Rahi creatures have masks. And each of the masks that they wear, there's like different types, there's different power levels, and they imbue the creatures with either some power, no power, or great power. And each of the beings must have a mask. Like, you have to be wearing them constantly, or you will get weaker and then eventually like go into a coma like state or die.
Ooh. There's some allegory there, I bet.
Uh-huh. So there's three general main types of masks. There's the powerless ones. So the powerless ones are what those little cute Matorans wear constantly. They're not of any distinct shape. We'll get into like the different like images of them versus the like quality of them. I think what the best analog here is that your powerless ones are your grays, your noble ones are your blues, and then your greats are your purples.
Okay.
They're all just like different levels, but they all have different modifiers on them. So the noble one, and I guess this is back to the original discussion we had, but these are called Kanohi, and those are the masks. So the masks are called Kanohi, which is the Maori word for mask. The noble ones have weaker powers, and they are most commonly worn by the Taraga, which are the village elders, the former Toa that have relinquished their great power, and they now just have somewhat noble power, I guess. And then the great level, your purples, they were worn almost exclusively by the Toa warriors, but some other powerful beings like Makuta, who is, I guess, technically a Toa, but not really, and then other members of the Order of Mata Nui also wore them too. And these are the ones that when you look at that instruction booklet, like that red mask that he is wearing, that mm-hmm. is the Kanohi of, that one is of shielding, but that is his actual mask that he wears.
Okay. Can you swap them out in universe? Yes. Not as a toy. So like you could increase your in-universe power level by finding better gear, essentially.
To some degree, yes. If you scroll all the way down mm-hmm. in that booklet, you'll see the six different masks of each of the Toa Mata. But you'll see those little circles next to each mask is them in a different color. So the masks themselves have particular powers attached to them. So
since your class.
Yeah. And I don't necessarily have what color they are canonically, but basically the six main ones are the mask of shielding, which does what it says, the mask of water breathing, the mask of levitation, the mask of speed, the mask of strength, and the most fun one, the mask of X-ray vision.
Okay, I was gonna say, what's that? Must have been that's the white one there with the mechanical eyeball scanner looking thing.
Yeah. So the kind of fun thing with all of them is that these masks come in all the different colors. So you would be able to, like, as a kid, you would be able to get a red version of the water breathing one, which is the blue one on this sheet, and you would be able to put that on your red warrior, like Tahu can have the water breathing mask for whatever adventure it needs to go on. And it matrixes out from there. So the mask themselves are not like legendary in the sense that there is only one of them. They are, you know, they are purpose-built things that can kind of be traded around and everything.
But Tahu is always red?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Because he's of fire.
Okay, so he could not put on a blue mask.
It's a good question. I don't know if the masks are colored in that way. I think they are usually gray until they are put on, but that's just from a weird comic panel I'm remembering now.
Okay, I'm sure we'll find out more about that at some point.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, right now, especially with the Toa Mata, we're suffering a little bit from... They made six action figures and a play setting for it. And as the mask stuff grows and becomes more important, we'll probably get into it more.
Yeah.
So that they all six of them go on a fun adventure to discover their mask, find it. They go on quests and everything, and then they come back and they all get together and have a moment where they're like, okay, cool. We have our masks of power. It is time for us to go get this guy.
Time to summon Captain Planet.
Exactly. And by summoning Captain Planet, what they do is they take their mask and they put it on a... And I guess this is actually what you are looking at next to those masks, which I didn't realize. It all comes back to play sets, I guess. So if you have all six of your heroes, you can take their masks on and stick them on this thing that is called a Suva Kaita, which is what is depicted there next to the masks. It's just kind of like a round pedestal that you put each of the masks in. And what happens is that they place their mask on there and they transform into a legendary Konohi, which is a golden version of each of the masks. So now what they have is a gold version that is imbued with the powers of all of them. And now they're able to go on their giant adventure to go take down Teradax, the Makuta, and fight him to the death.
Okay. So each mask becomes like... imbued with more power, I guess, is my understanding here.
That's how it seems. Okay. I cannot confirm that, but it seems that is the case.
Okay.
And I think it's also one of the things that they kind of drop after a little while. This idea of being able to transform the masks into another one. There are other legendary ones that come up, like the Mask of Light, or Mask of Time and the Mask of Life, which we will talk about later. But I think this is kind of the only time this really happens.
There's definitely some like first draft only draft vibes to some, yes. To some of this.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, man, I can't argue against that. So
it is fun though how much, like, even looking at the very basics of how this is, it's built as like a serialized story immediately. Like, they have, like, conclusions and everything, but it's very funny to me that in 2001, they're just like, okay, I really like comic books. What if we made comic books but Lego? And then they did.
And they sold a lot of them.
A lot of them. Many, many of them. So, yeah, they get their masks. And now they go on their boss raid, I guess, if that's how we want to refer to it. They enter Teradax's lair, which is a cave, obviously, as one would expect, and they go through this cave and they're confronted with a couple of different greatest hits of bosses. There are two giant crabs, and each of them have two noble level masks of dark sight, so they're able to see in the dark. You know, that's I guess like a weaker version of the Mask of X-ray Vision. And they're big ass crabs, and they start getting their asses beat almost immediately. So the Toamata have to do something that you have had spoiled for you. They have to combine into two Toa Kaita, which is a fusion form of three Toa apiece. And they fuse together into probably the worst looking to collect it's all of the things and combine together.
Oh my god. If you said this was like some kind of I don't know, eldritch punishment mm-hmm. for these creatures, I would believe you.
I promise you it gets better in the future, but yeah, the combined forms of taking all of the pieces of these sets and then cramming them all together is just, it's rough.
It's got some real industrial accident vibes.
Yeah, it is. Everyone's doing their best, and they tried really hard, but I think this is what I would have done if I had three of them and combined them. Like, this is the level of Megazord I would have made.
Yeah.
Just odd that someone got paid a bunch of money to put this together as part of the plan.
That's also the Megazord the toy designers made.
Yeah, it does get better, but it's a whole thing.
It's got some season one vibes to it for sure.
Yes, they do get significantly better.
Yeah.
So yes, they they fight these giant crabs one on one, and they destroy them handily in their cool new fusion form. Again, taken from Dragon Ball.
Sometimes you gotta fight a kaiju and a giant mech.
Yep. And sometimes the giant mech just
sometimes
is your friend.
You gotta be the giant mech. Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird if you look at this image. One of the hands is just the two heads without masks on, which is grim.
Do they... Man, I'm sure this is deeper than they care to think about it, but, like, from us, who's in control of this thing? And how does this work from, like, a brain standpoint?
I could not tell you.
Do they share each other's thoughts? Is this like a mind meld thing?
I think so. Okay. It says right here, Toa Kaita were fusions of three Toa into one single being. Do with that what you will.
Huh. Okay.
One single being. Merging bodies and mind.
Ooh. Merging mind, because you could have a single being. Is it all three minds combined into one shell, or is it like these three guys black out, this uber mech comes into being? Is it like the Avatar state kind of thing?
Maybe.
Where it's almost like a different,
they like blink out of character existence and...
in a way. Yeah. Yeah. Do they just like wake up and they're done, or are they conscious of this transmogrification nightmare factory?
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Anyway. it's kind of moot, but they end up fighting the crabs, they defeat the crabs, and then their next great foe arrives, and as they near their great foe in the face of such amounts of evil, the fusion cannot hold, so they all fall apart into their individual forms again.
I was kind of hoping those two were going to fuse together into a slightly larger one yet again.
I hope that there's something like that. There must
fractal
be.
Bionicle sort of thing. Yeah.
So they encounter the Shadow Toa beings that look exactly like the Toa Mata, and they were just as strong, but they were their shadow selves.
Where did those come from?
Yep. Great evil is where it came from.
Okay.
But it's a good question. Like, were they holding on to these ones? Are they manifestations of something?
Do they kill these ones and take the masks? Is there some kind of weird mask collector?
Oh, wait, hang on.
Like your Grievous of lightsabers, but just...
Kind of. So
just got a bucket of heads somewhere.
All right. I forgot that there is one sentence after the Shadow Toa in my notes that I completely memory hold and forgot about. All right. This is going back to our fusion discussion. The Toa fought long and hard against these newfound foes. They eventually managed to defeat them by realizing the shadows were a part of themselves, and then they absorbed them into their essence. So, shrug. They defeated the Shadow Toa by knowing that they were part of them, and they must embrace their shadow sides in order to progress, I guess.
Okay. Yep.
No questions?
That seems fine. Not that you're going to have answers to, man. I'm just going to make up my own lore. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. How do you embrace your shadow self?
I was really hoping.
Did they give him a hug? Did they strangle a kitten?
There's a hug.
I hope there's some kind of dark ritual that has to happen to embrace your shadow self.
Shadow Toa does not redirect. They are listed as false Toa. Oh, they were an illusion. Corrupted versions with all their powers, perfectly matching their respective counterparts. And then, citation needed, they accepted them by absorbing them into their bodies. Bionicle Chronicles 1.
What?
Wait, hang on.
Why would you absorb an illusion?
I could not.
That's not what an illusion is. Okay.
I do need to get Bionicle Chronicles number 1, though, in order to understand this tale better. Bionicle Chronicles, that's so good.
That's...
Anyway. That's
some nonsense right there.
They absorbed their shadow selves, whether illusion or not. They welcomed them into their heart and knew that there was no defeating great evil without embracing it first or something.
Maybe there's like a tale that they're stealing for this also. Like, maybe this is an allusion to some cultural reference that you and I are not familiar with.
Yeah, do you just defeat Shadow Link, or do you accept them into your heart?
Bold of you to assume I'm not Shadow Link to start.
Always accepting Shadow Link into your heart.
Be the Shadow Link you want to see.
Red eyes and all. So they move on. They've defeated their shadow selves. They move on to the Pterodax fight. And they defeat him. Surprise. He appears to them.
It was destined.
It was destined.
Well, they eliminated any narrative tension right off the bat.
So he appears to them as a Matoran. So he is kind of like one of the little shorty guys, one of the cute ones. And he's like, hey, don't worry about me. I'm not scary. And then in a bit of a swerve, it turns out he is a tentacled eldritch horror at this point and has like tentacles and like goopiness coming down from the ceiling of the cave. And then he fights them in his Cthulhu form. They handily defeat him, but before they can truly defeat the evil, he runs away and hides as expected.
As all big endgame bosses do.
Yeah.
The first time.
He releases these things called the Bo-Rock, which are insectoid creatures, in order to bide some time and return more powerful. And the Bo-Rock are actually
are
when
they
I...
mechanical?
Biomechanical. They are okay. Insectoid-looking dudes. Hive-minded mechanical insectoids. Controlled by a single strange creature. And these are the ones that I super remember because they're little roly-poly guys.
There we go.
And you could turn, like, they would turn into, like, little balls. Like, they go into a Metroid ball.
Okay, and they're replicating the colors of our base squad.
Yeah.
I don't recognize these, I don't think.
I think I had the green one. Because I remember their eyes and that you could morph them into a ball and roll them around and stuff. We will talk about the Bo-Rock at a different time. They have like a whole culture and everything.
They have a whole thing.
Yeah, there's a whole thing. And they also are from 100,000 years ago. They were created by the Great Beings separately. But some of them were released at the end of this great arc as the next great foe to the Toamata. And that is the, so I guess the important part here is that the Toamata's story lives on. They have not achieved their destiny of awakening Mata Nui, the great spirit robot. That will be an episode for another time,
man.
Cause they have to get a real glow
leave
up
me with that. Yeah. That we need Super Saiyan level first before we can retire them.
There are, I think they get armor is what the big upgrade is. They become the Toa Nuva and they get sick armor. And, I think the main one here has a Batleth, which is for you.
Rad. But we're going to have to do some next gen stuff.
We will talk about the Toa Nuva later. But yeah, that is where we will end our tale of the Toamata. With the original designs from 2001-2002.
This one places.
Yeah, this is a mammoth thing that is just... I started this because it was like, oh, Lego. Like, I'll do a Lego kit one, and that'll be a short, quick episode to do. And it turns out there is a mythology here that is far more extensive than I had really, really thought about.
Yeah, I assumed... they just made some kind of neat looking robot dudes.
Yep.
And that was sort of the end of it.
Yeah. No, there's like a whole defeat the insect queens. There's you know, all of the stuff with the White Ranger I was talking about, like he is a whole other character that has a whole other arc and everything. So it just, you just click on one of these pages and it just goes.
Yeah. Huh. Is there a dinosaur version at some point too? Are they going to run the full Power Rangers?
That is a good question. I bet there is.
I know. That's what I was just thinking.
I didn't even think about that, but of course there is. There has to be.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, we.
And I might have to do Power Rangers now.
Yeah, there are. Let me just check here. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 teams, and at least 4 of them have like second versions of them.
Wow. Okay.
So it goes.
So this is a deep well.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot going on here. And like I said, there's a lot of stuff that happens. There's like political intrigue and everything that happens in the intervening 100,000 years. So and there's plenty. This is one of the biggest wiki pages I have seen, and it is actually pretty well managed. So I am excited to dig further into the realm of Bionicle and all of these weird eras that happen and find out what the Reign of Shadows is.
Ooh, that's good.
Good name.
R-E-I-G-N or yep. R-A-I-N?
R-E-I-G-N.
Mm. I'll take either reign there. Would be a good fantasy event.
Yeah, there's some good stuff. Oh yeah, the planet gets back together. That's another thing that we will talk about. There is literally, yeah,
I assumed that would happen at some point.
It is, I think, the end of the timeline, but there is a picture of a panel I have seen of the Great Spirit robot with beams shooting out of both of its hands, and it is pulling moons into a planet, which is just all-time,
yeah,
all-time image. Yeah. But yeah, that is the Toamata, a incredibly potentially brief explanation of the timeline. And I think from there, we will leave Bionicle to rest for a little bit. But I will be returning to this well.
I love how all of our brief explanations are 2 hours long.
Listen, there's only so brief that you can be when it is an entire cosmology.
That was a comment, not a judgment. I have zero wiggle room on that front, so.
All right. So that is an episode. We will come back with more Bionicle, definitely more RuneScape, I'm sure. And I have some episodes that I'm not going to talk about in case they ever just disappear into the ether like they always do. Yeah. But yeah, if you like the show, just go to gordonhamburger.com. That's where all the stuff is. You'll find links to everything. If you want to message us, it's there. You can find me on Threads at Phil Bothan with the links in the show notes. Logan is offline, as is his wont.
Yeah, don't find me anywhere, ideally.
Don't look for him. I'll put a picture of the stapler in the show description so you don't even have to look for that.
Perfect.
And then, oh yeah, listen to our friend Nicholas Cahill's music on SoundCloud. He's the guy who did the intro, the outro, and the interlude music that I'm sure that you've heard now. If you are looking for, I don't know, power metal that is vaguely reminiscent of Lord of the Rings, he can help you out there. There's pirate music in there. It's an absolute joy to scroll through there. So go check it out.
He's better at music than we are at podcasts.
That is damn certain. Yes.
If you're listening to this, then you'll probably like that.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess thanks for listening. Go check that stuff out. And we will be back next week with another Codex entry on something that has just got stuck in our craw forever. Goodbye. Auf Wiedersehen. We are done. Conclusion.
Dun, dun, dun. Finn.